Welcome to the Sargassum Podcast, where we learn about the latest ideas and concepts about sargassum. This podcast is funded by the Resilience, Sustainable Energy and Marine Biodiversity Program, RESMBIT. It's financed under the 11th European Development Fund, EDF, Caribbean Overseas Countries and Territories Regional Program. RESMBIT is being implemented by expertise grants, with primary stakeholders being the 12 Caribbean overseas countries. Welcome everybody to the Sargassum Podcast. I hope you're all well. And today I'm here with Jenna as my co-host. And Jenna, we just recorded another podcast like a week ago. So how have you been? Well, what's new in your life?
Pretty much still the same, just grading, you know, doing a lot of grading. The quarter's almost over, so finals week is next week for the class that I'm TAing, so they're all, you know, nervous and excited for that. But I'm also excited to have the quarter end. I have a class coming up for myself on facilitating change. It's a coastal science and policy class, so that's part of my PhD, so I'm really looking forward to that week because it will just be dedicated to that course. So that's exciting. That's pretty much it.
That sounds like an exciting course. I met up with Evelyn, who's also one of our co-hosts. She does a lot of the Spanish, but also some of the English episodes. And we were sending off all the packages with Sargassum products and books and certificates for the Sargassum course. And of course, I got to spend some time with our mini host, Emily. Now she's already 5 months old, so she's getting big.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that very happens cute. So fast. Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, so next week I'm off on the research cruise to do a pilot study on the impact of sargassum on the deep sea. So we get to go on a really big research vessel, the James Cook from the UK.
Oh.
And we get to play with, myself. We have a lot of deep sea scientists who get to play with deep sea research equipment, and I get to see how it all works. So that's very exciting.
How cool! That will be really fun.
Yeah. But today we have a really special guest, Charmaine, who actually emailed us just before we were doing the course and telling us about what she does with sargassum in the Turks and Caicos Islands. And just after her email, I was due to go to the Turks and Caicos Islands. So, of course, I went to visit her and her bird sanctuary. And it's just an amazing place. And I'm so happy that we found out about her project and that we can have her on the podcast. So I'm going to briefly introduce her, and then we're going to ask her some really interesting questions. So Charmaine Elliott used to work as a consultant and paralegal in many fields over the years until November 2021. And due to medical issues, she was advised by her doctor to change her lifestyles. In 2012, with her partner Kimmet and her, they took a lunch break and decided to explore. And he took her to a place where his grandfather took him as a young boy. And that place now is known as Kimcha Village Bird Sanctuary. And we'll talk a little bit more during the episode what happened between 2012 and now and why this place is now a bird sanctuary. When they arrived there in this area, it was abandoned and used as a garbage site due to the destruction of the previous sand mining. Birds were dying and it smelled because there was a lot of vehicles that were dumped there. And there were holes in there that were dug during the sand mining and not filled up. And these holes were full with salt water and, of course, all the trash in the vehicles. Kimcha Village Bird Sanctuary is Charmaine's and Kimmet's home as well. So it's not just a bird sanctuary, it's where they live, that they share with tourists and with everybody else. And their motto is come as a visitor, leave as family. And they host programs to educate their community and also learn from their seniors. Jermaine, a very warm welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Francesca and Jenna. It's very nice for you to invite me on this podcast.
We're happy to have you here and excited to learn from you and all of your experiences with sargassum. The first question we ask all of our guests is, what is sargassum to you?
Well, for me, sargassum means everything. When we got here during the year that we first reached at this location, sargassum was a problem for us. We came here and sargassum was coming up on the beach and we had no idea how to get rid of it. We would remove it like most people does and try to fill up holes and everything with it. But the more we remove it, the more sargassum came out. So during 2017, after the storm came and there was so much sargassum, it actually covered the entire area and we had no idea what to do with it. And we started pulling it back towards the water. And by pulling it back towards the water, there were waves still coming back into the shoreline. So as we pull it towards the water, the waves were coming in and was actually covering it with sand. And as we were pulling it down, we were pulling sand onto it also. So after about a day of doing that, we left. And the next morning we came back and what we found was a sandbank. The entire area was covered with sand and all the sargassum was under it and it brought it up 3 feet high. So it was amazing. And we stood there and we're like, oh my God, all this time, we're actually trying to remove all of this off of the beach when we could have used it to build the beach up because the area at that time was already damaged by the sand mining and the erosion from the sea and everything like that. So that idea actually came to us through nature, basically just trying to remove it from the beach and nature came in and showed us that this is the way to go. So since 2017, we've actually been using sargassum to actually build our coastline and protect the wetlands areas.
That's great. It's always wonderful to hear sort of success stories, you know, instead of it being a problem, it being a solution. I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
So my next question is, how much sargassum does your coastline actually receive? And you already told us a bit how you're utilizing it, but maybe tell us a bit more about that.
Well, because of the fact that we're on the northern shoreline, sargassum is basically an everyday situation for us. Sometimes we just get a little, sometimes we get a lot. It all depends. Some of the times we don't have to do anything, because it will come in and the water will take it back out. So reclaim it back out at sea. But so once it comes in and it stays for a while, what we do is we use it as a building block for us, as well as the birds use it to feed on. So we leave some of it on the coastline available because we love to have birds on our coastline also. So we basically make little tunnels where areas where birds can go and actually feed on the animals that comes in the sargassum. So we keep it basically eco-friendly for everyone, our tourists, our people who's walking, as well as our birds, our crabs, and everybody else.
In case we have listeners who are in similar situations to you as far as geographically or kind of what, you know, what they're experiencing with the volume of sargassum, can you give them like a little, you know, how-to on the coastline farming kind of that you're doing? Just to have an idea, yes. Maybe if someone might be able to use this information in their area?
Yes. Well, what we do on our coastline, we're actually right on the ocean. We have reefs that protects us in certain areas. Certain areas there, we have an area there on our coastline that is called the Wheel and Cut. where there is no reefs at all. So the waves comes all the way up onto the coastlines. What we do is we look at the coastline and see exactly where, how far the sargassum comes up. Once it comes up to that certain area, then what we do is we start taking the sand from up off the edge of it and covering it from the inside going down towards the water. And if you do that all the time, when the wave comes up and it comes to that certain point, it brings the sand in, and then the sand and the water just covers it. So your job will basically be to bring it to that point and cover the front, I'm not sure if it's the front end or the back end, but the end of the property over the sand with sand. So when the waves bring the water and the sand up, it covers it. So it makes like a little cake when it comes in like this. And then you just continue from your end. And after a while, you have like a hill that comes up. Now, what happens is when the waves continue to come up, it continue to bring sand. Once that sargassum is packed under sand, now the waves comes over with just water and sand. And then it starts to build up that area with just sand because the sargassum is now under the hill. So it does, nothing comes over with the water but sand. And so now you get the sargassum area is covered and you have sand that is beach sand that is still coming up to build up your area over the sargassum. So every time, and then the next time, once this area is built up, when the sargassum comes in again, it can't come up here, so it stops here. So then you start building right there also, but you still have a little hill that's here and the water is still coming in and actually bringing sand. So it starts from the bottom and it's a ripple effect that takes you up to the top that brings up your beach and protects the area. And it's a hard job. A lot of people, I mean, like to put the equipment out there.
Yeah, it's
yeah,
a lot of work.
Yeah, I was going to say, exactly.
It is a lot of work. And when I came to visit you, you're also raking your beach daily to keep it in that form and keep it nice and, yeah. So maybe you want to tell our listeners a bit what the reason is why you do the raking as well.
Yes, well, the raking, what we've come to realize is that on the beach, the sand just lays still on the ground. And when the sand blows, we would think that if the sand blows, it will cover the holes inside of the beach as it blows. But what we have found out that those holes remain the holes, the sand just built up around the holes. And unless you break the beach even, the sand does not fall on in those areas. So to make sure sand fall in those areas, we rake it all the time and level it off. Also, we have areas that was destroyed inland with sand mining. So the beach was actually like a hole. There was just like a peak and then there was a hole that they took all the sand out. So what we have to do is rake that sand to try and level it off, to try to bring the entire beach up to a certain height to make sure that we can stop waves, because previously waves would come over from the ocean into the wetlands and flood the entire wetlands. But now it's so far, we had a Category 3 hurricane lately that it didn't happen. Well, in 2017, it did, and it destroyed us primarily. But in 2017, when the hurricane came through the Category 3, it didn't damage us at all. So we were very, very happy when we came back and look around, and all we had was sargassum that we was happy to have, because we brought up our beach another, I think it was 16 inches and brought it out another 4 feet. So it was amazing. It was great.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So you said at the beginning that first when the sargassum came, it was a nuisance to you. But since you found out how you can use it for the beach nourishment, is it ever a nuisance to you? Like, is there ever too much sargassum that you cannot deal with it?
Well, sometimes we would come and we would have an amazing beach. We would have a function happening the day, the next day, and we will come down and we will get everything covered and we would have an amazing beach and get up the next morning and ready for that function. And waves came in the night before and we have tons of sargassum all over up on top of the beach. So yeah, sometimes it's kind of like, oh, you know, this has to stop. But, you know, because you have to do it all over again. It's something that you have to do over and over again. It's not something, you know, I always tell people, I say, if you want to see the beauty of my beach, you have to come when I'm finished, when I call you and say, come now. Because if I say come the next day, there's no telling what it's going to look like the next day. So, so, and that's nature. We work with it.
Yeah, that's very much like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when you're living right on the ocean. It's a very dynamic place, so changes all the time.
Yes, it does.
Can you tell us what made you and Kimmett decide to acquire this property and what you did to turn it from a dump pit wasteland into what sounds like a beautiful and thriving bird sanctuary?
Well, like Francesca said inside of the bio, we actually were on a lunch tour, fed up with everything that was happening in town, just needed a break from everything. And he knew of a place where his grandfather brought him many, many years ago. And he said, let's go and check it out and to get away from everything. And we came down here. And when we did, it was beautiful, but it was devastating to see the state that it was in. But we saw the beauty within all the destruction. And at first, it was just, you know, we came down a few times afterwards, basically because it was nice and quiet. And we started taking stuff out of the water, and we started fishing. When we fish in, we would put a fish in the water to see whether the water was salt or the water was fresh. And, you know, we did all these little things, and we started cleaning up and taking all the cedar because we have casuarina trees. They are nice big casuarinas. So a lot, years and years and years of casuarina was on the ground. So we started just raking the casuarina from around it and seeing how beautiful the sand was. And, you know, it just started getting more beautiful and more beautiful every time we came. And we finally decided to check and see who were the owners of it. And we found that it was our government. So we applied to our government for that property. And at first, we never didn't think of it as a bird sanctuary. We actually just felt it was going to be an eco place where people can go and relax and everything. But the more we clean, the more birds we saw coming in. And every area we cleaned, we just saw more birds and more birds, and birds was coming and taking over. We sometimes had to stop and let them do what they have to do or move to another area because they were there and, you know, they were just kind of like wanting to attack you if you don't move out of the way. So we continued to clean and a lot more birds started coming in. And then we started doing a lot more things in the area. And we remembered that my mother, before she died in 2018, she had spoke to us about finding a place for the seniors to be. And he thought, my partner Kimmett, he said, you know, we have a perfect place that we can do something here for the seniors also. You know, so as we clean, more ideas started coming into play on things we want to do and things that my mother said to me or his grandfather said to him. And the whole entire concept of Kemshaw Village came from my mother and his grandfather. So we must give thanks and praise to the both of them for actually instilling some great qualities in us and some of their vision in us to see things the way they saw it when they were growing up.
So Charmaine, you are doing a lot of community events, and one of them is a monthly senior lunch at your sanctuary. And you have a very special story why you chose to serve specifically seniors. So I want our listeners to know this as well, because hopefully then they also decide to do more stuff for seniors as well. Can you tell us about that story and why you have senior lunches?
Yes, well, we have, we do a seniors day every fourth Saturday of every month at 1 o'clock. We open up the gates at Kamshar Village and bring in the seniors from anywhere. Once you consider yourself a senior, persons that consider themselves not really a senior, but do want to be involved in the program, we bring them in as senior volunteers, and they will come in and they will actually take care of the senior for that day, make sure they eat, make sure they go, if they want to swim, if they want to read, if they want to talk, if they want to use the bathroom, whatever that senior, the senior wants, the senior volunteers is there to take care of them. And this came about from my mom. My mom died in 2018, Rosalind Louise Hicks King. And she asked myself, as well as my partner, Kimmett Harvey, she spoke to both of us before she died. And she said that she wanted us to do something for the seniors and put something there where the seniors can socialize and get together and enjoy themselves. And my question to her was, why was she asking this? And her reasoning was, is that because many days my mom would say that she were not feeling well and she had to go by the hospital to see the doctor or the clinic to see the doctor, and she would go to see the doctor. And, you know, I always wondered why she would always feel sick at certain times and go and see the doctor and come back home and she would be fine. There was nothing wrong with her. Or sometimes I would ask her, did you see the doctor? You were there all day. And she says, no. So I sometimes got a bit upset saying, well, my mom was at the hospital all that time and didn't get to see a doctor. Well, not realizing that she was not going to the doctor because she was sick. She was going to the doctor because all her other friends, senior friends, also did the same thing, told their kids that they needed to go to see the doctor and would get dropped off by the hospital or the clinic to see the doctor. And they would get together in the restaurant or the cafeteria of the clinic and socialize for the day. So that basically were their hangout spot where they get to meet and talk about everything that's going on and get all the news on everything. So that's how our parents knew what was happening all around the islands, because they would get together and socialize and then go home later on in the day, when I'm sure a lot of us kids was panicking, thinking that they're ill. And they're seeing the doctors much too often when they're actually just socializing. So that was the reasoning for Rosalind Seniors Center. And out of Rosalind Seniors Center, we have a social group that comes every fourth Saturday of every month. We're open, rain, blow, or sunshine. As long as our government is not calling for a storm and a shutdown, we open. And we do healthy prepared food. We smoke all our meats from 6 to 8 hours with the Casuarina cedar trees. We use just natural vegetables, and we have fruits and baked healthy prepared pastries. And we just bring them down. Sometimes we'll bring persons to read poetry to them, or we'll bring persons down to just sing for them, or we will bring a permanent figure out of the community down just to enjoy the day with them. So, and we have people from all over that comes, all over, people that's on vacation, they will come down and spend the day with us. So the seniors, they look forward to Rosalind Seniors social event every fourth Saturday of every month. They are there and we're there, and we welcome them always.
That's a wonderful thing that you provide for the community. And a great place to exchange information about, you know, how life was before your time and, you know, potentially other people who are around in the community. So that's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with us. You also have a program called Guns Down, Sails Up. Can you tell us a little bit more about this program?
Yes. Well, we started this program during the pandemic, where we bring young men down to Kemshaw Village, and my partner, who's actually loves sailboats and sailing and kayaking and everything, we bring them down and he'll take them out sailing and fishing, and they will get to talk to each other. And it's similar to Rouslyn Senior's Day, because they just get to leave all their animosity wherever it is they left it, and just come down here off the grid, just catch fish and clean fish and fry fish and eat fish and, you know, just have a wonderful time. We also do it for our Pee Wee League sailors, between 5 and 10 year olds. We bring them down also, and they get to go out on the sailboat, our Hobie Cat. We haven't done it for a little while now because we lost just our sail, so we're getting ready to try and acquire another sail for the Hobie. But once we get that, we will start the program again. People are asking, when are the Pee Wee League's sailing day? So we're trying to get ready. So hopefully we can get one of them done for the Christmas holidays, where they'll be able to come down and spend a day with us sailing. We do a lot of other community programs with the Methodist School Key Club. And with the Kiwanis, they come down. We do cleanup campaigns with them. They also volunteer their time with the seniors. We have the Rotaracts, the Rotaract crew that comes down. They donate reading materials to the seniors, and they come down on Seniors Day to help and assist with the seniors. And we have the Gratitude Girls from the Harvest Ministry that also comes down and do a lot of assisting with taking care of the seniors and making sure they get their fresh coconuts when they get here and that sort of thing. So it's amazing. You know, you get a great group together and everything works itself out.
Yeah, that's indeed a really cool program. And I know that Provo has a lot of problems with gang violence, so that yes. Having programs that help and bring these people together and get to know each other hopefully has an effect and leads to less criminal activity on the island. My last question is really one I think a lot of people sometimes wonder if they could live off-grid or wish they could live off-grid. And I wanted to ask you, what do you like the most about living off-grid?
The peace and quiet, not seeing anybody, not hearing anything. Just total relaxation. You get to experience so many different things. Living off the grid has changed my life completely, has changed my outlook on life, has changed the way I live, has changed the way I eat, has changed the way I think about things and problems. It's just amazing. Just even a few hours off of the grid, sometimes we have people come down and they leave here and they say, we felt like we went on vacation. So it's just amazing to just be somewhere where it's just you and nature. You can hear and everything. You can feel everything. It's just natural. It's just completely natural. It's when I first came here, I was high blood pressure, hypertensive. And since I've been here the last 3 years, I haven't been on any medication. I've lost all the weight. I'm down to 145 pounds. No medication, no blood pressure, no nothing. Just, you know, just eating natural, preparing food natural. Everybody asks us, are you on a diet? No, I'm not on a diet. I eat everything. Pork, steak, chicken, beef, everything. I eat everything. We just prepare it healthy. And that is what it's all about. Getting back in touch with nature, getting back to your roots, This living off the grid, we don't have much worries. We don't have much worries. We're on solar panels. We're on water catchments. We're using wood as our thing. So it's just a simple life. It makes you realize that all of those things that were so important to you shouldn't have been. And you should have focused more on people and community and helping and the environment and things that actually really do count in life, so that you make a mark here to say that you made the world better just being here. So that's what this is all about, making a difference, making something better, and educating people to know that just picking up a piece of garbage off the side of the road, it makes a difference. It makes a tremendous amount of difference, you know. So it's important that we all know that if we take care of the environment, it will take care of us.
Jermaine, it was really nice talking to you. And I mean, it's always nicer talking in person than online, but it was still nice, really, really nice catching up with you. And to introduce you to Jenna and our listeners. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on our podcast and, you know, teaching us about how to use sargassum for beach nourishment and how to transform an area into a sanctuary for birds, but not only for birds, but also for the community. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, so Jenna, what did you take back from this conversation?
I really loved that they found a place that was literally a dump and, you know, what sounded like a wasteland and made it into a space not only for wildlife to develop, you know, and kind of regain nature in that area, but also for community. I think that's really neat that they were able to do that.
Yeah, and also for her own personal health, because she had health problems and needed to step down, and now living in nature really helps her and has improved her health. What I thought was really interesting is that they started off not like having a problem with sargassum, and then one day a way that they raked it differently or dealt with it differently showed them, oh, they can actually regain the beach. So it was like nature showing them how to work with sargassum and how to use it for their advantage and not see it as a nuisance. And that's really nice, like that, even though we know how humans have altered nature, has given us this sargassum problem, is telling us, you know, you need to change your ways. People like Jermaine and Kimmet, who have changed their ways and are doing a lot for nature, they're given this gift of being able to work with sargassum and use it for their advantage. I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, that's truly like a nature-based solution. I mean, like, yes. You know, down to its core. Yeah.
And no machines, no nothing. It's all manual labor. So, yeah, it's very beautiful.
Well, thank you all for being here with us today. We hope that you learned right along with us and you will continue to join us on our adventures in learning about sargassum and how it affects everyone.
Yes, thank you all for being here, and we hear from you soon, or you'll hear from us soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in today and learning with us from our guests. If you want more information about what our guests talked about today, please check our show notes for links and information in our archives. And don't forget to like and share our podcast with your friends.
The Sargassum podcast is made possible through funding by the Resilient Sustainable Energy and Marine Biodiversity Program, RESENBIF, financed under the 11th European Development Fund, EDF, Caribbean Overseas Countries and Territories Regional Program. RESENBIF is being implemented by Expertise France, with the primary stakeholders being the 12 Caribbean Overseas Countries and Territories. The podcast is produced by Paola Diaz, Mario Garcia Rodriguez, Leo Maridakis, and Elois Lopez, and it is hosted by Francisca Elmer, Jenna Contucchio, Florence Menes, Cleo Maridakis, Evelyn Salas, and Paola Diaz. We will be back in 2 weeks with another exciting guest. The music of the podcast is from the song Them A Pray by Drizzle, the Road Runner, an artist from Roatan. Follow him on Spotify or YouTube for more music.